and welcome to episode 253 of the Retro Asylum. I'm here with Mads, and this is not a Game Club episode, is it, Mads?
What? Isn't it?
No.
I thought we were playing a game.
No, we're not talking about Theme Hospital anymore.
So should I turn off my C64 then?
Should we hijack Stephen Dean's month and do an episode on Mayhem in Monsterland?
Yeah, we may have to, mate. We may have to.
Let's We may have to. I see you've just seen your Discord message, actually. You're starting to like it now.
Yeah, I am. It's been a sleeper hit for me. I started out not really digging it. It was a technical marvel from the get-go. The graphics are great. The controls are very, very smooth. And it sounds good as well. And it's really, really playable. But I just didn't really like the gameplay and the game design as such, the level design. Mm. But after a while, it's grown on me. So got to, the happy part of stage two today, and I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, it's definitely, it definitely rewards spending time with it because it is so damn difficult.
Yeah, knowing the levels and know where the enemies are going to be in a second is crucial to progress in this game. And maybe that's actually why it's not as enjoyable when you start out, but if you put the time in, it's actually a really good game.
I've been playing it
with my new Arcader joystick that just arrived today as well. Yeah. So that was great.
They're nice, aren't they?
Really nice, really nice. I mean, the stick has just got that little bit more travel, if that's what you call it.
I know what you mean.
Yeah, so you need to push it a little bit further to the sides and up and down that you're used to. It's because it's an arcade stick. I got used to that in 2 minutes, and now I just love it. It's a great stick.
Yeah, it feels nice in the hand, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. It does.
This is going to sound all kinds of wrong, but when I first unpackaged it and set it up, found the shaft was very short.
Mm.
Did you?
I bet you did.
I knew there'd be a comment. You can't really say something like that without inviting comment, can you? But you know what I mean? Like the actual, compared to like a Competition Pro or a Zip Stick, it's quite short, isn't it?
It's exactly like the arcade sticks on the Japanese candy cane cabinets, for example.
Yeah, no, it does feel very nice to use. So I've been playing. That's what I've been playing Mayhem on myself, plugged in. I love having a brand new joystick with it.
Me too.
You know, with an Atari 9 pin. So I'm
going to give this joystick a little testing with the different machines I have that support that port and see how I like it. And if I like it, I'm actually going to immediately order another one because I want to be able to play two player.
Yeah.
And now I can finally, if this stick is good enough so that I can risk it, I can finally take my SIP stick apart and get the micro switches replaced. And I haven't dared do that because the micro switches are getting a bit dull. They're kind of sticky by now.
Yeah.
So I want to get them changed, but I haven't dared do that because it's the only stick I have that's still really, really good.
Yeah.
So and it's my original SIP stick from like 35 years ago. So, now it'll be repaired very soon if I find that the Arcader is good enough as a replacement.
Yeah, the acid test for me will be Sensible Soccer because I can't play Sensible Soccer now with my Zip Stick because the joystick just isn't fluid enough.
Okay.
Around the eight directions.
I actually haven't played Sensible Soccer in years. Maybe I should load that up later today.
Yeah, that is the one I find. That is the acid, for me anyway. That's the acid test with any old joystick. Is if it can if I can play a decent game of Sensible Soccer, then it's still got some decent life in it. I must try it. But we're not here to talk Mayhem, although, and we won't be back to talk Mayhem, although I probably will submit it. I don't even know when the guys are recording, but I plan on submitting an audio recording.
A listener clip. Interesting.
Just like the listeners. And then we're going to be back very soon to talk about the July. We've started receiving some nominations for Listener's Choice.
Oh, and some great ones. I'm really looking forward to this.
So we need to dive on.
And you will be banned from selecting anything. That's the best part. I mean, we just have to whittle down the list. I will choose five or four or however many we up to choose. And then the listeners will choose, Chris. You won't be involved in any way. It's brilliant.
My reputation has gone before me. It's gone down. My reputation has gone down the radiator chute.
Mm, yes.
Hasn't it? It seems. Anyway, why are we here, Mads?
Yeah, why are we here? So we are talking to some nice guys in a minute, aren't we?
Yeah. Yeah. It's not a retro game. Literally, we just get that out there off the bat.
But with retro sensibilities.
it's a game with retro sensibilities. So it's a game by Hit P Studio called Shieldmaid MX. Shieldmaid comprises Mikhail Kroda.
Shieldmaid.
What? Sorry, did I say that wrong? What how do you pronounce it?
So it's like Shieldmaid, but pronounced in German, I guess. So Shield instead.
And I'm saying Shieldmaid.
Mm, yeah.
In a very anglicised way. Well, thank you, Matt. I'm glad you're here. We're in this kind of weird time paradox. We have actually just recorded the interview, and I was thinking to myself at one point, what must I sound like here, surrounded by a Dane, a Dutch guy, and a German guy? It must sound terrible, so typically British. But there we go. Anyway, it's Mikhail Kroda and Johannes Nischel who comprise Hippie Studio, and they're going to be telling us about their shmup in development at the moment. Yeah, due out later this year. It's not a retro game, but it definitely one which is influenced by many retro games, and they talk about some of those influences. And it's one that I felt anyway, and I dragged Mads along into it, but it's one certainly what that I felt that knowing what our listeners and particularly our Discord members enjoy, I thought it's one that they would enjoy having their attention drawn towards. So
yeah, I fully agree. It's one I'm very interested in now. So I'm ready to beta test for these guys if they want me to.
Yeah, we're hoping that we can nab a couple of codes from them, aren't we? You just came out and asked. Well, I was doing the whole British thing. I'm too polite to ask, but now you blazed in there.
Of course.
Why not? Shall we hand over to our past selves then and
listen
to that interview with Mikhail and Johannes? Welcome to the Retro Asylum, Mikhail Kroda and... Right, I'm going to try and get this right. Johannes Nischel.
Thank you.
How did it do?
Yeah,
did. How's it going? Thanks.
Good.
Did pretty right. Well.
I'm glad.
Not very butchered, no.
First test passed. So, guys, you've joined us because you guys are working on a game. And it's a game. It's obviously a new game because you're working on it now. But it has very much retro sensibilities. And I think it looks like one that... certainly our community, I think, are going to enjoy. We'll get into that shortly. But first, I'll hand over to you guys just for some introductions and some background as to who you are and what brings you here.
Yeah, who kicks it off first?
Johannes? Go on, Mikhail.
All right, me then.
You go ahead.
I'll go ahead. My name is Mikhail. I sort of worked in and out of the games industry since 2005 or thereabouts in media, let's say magazine editing and all that stuff. And then online marketing and content management for companies such as Commodore, Nintendo, Microsoft. I did some localization work for Ubisoft as well. I podcast a lot about video games with Kane and Rince and the Video Wizards podcast. And since 2013, I had it in my head to start a game development studio, which is how I linked up with Johannes.
Right.
Yeah, and I have a completely different background. I have never really worked in the games industry, except for a brief period of, it was about 6 months. Mikhail, when was that? 2008, 2009?
When I joined, that was 2008.
Yeah, probably, right?
Yeah, late 2008, yeah.
Yeah, where I did an internship at Nintendo of Europe in their online marketing department. And that's where we met. I was still a student back then, and I continued being a student for a long time afterwards. I studied Japanese studies and computer science. And when we met, we pretty much right away realized that we had very similar sensibilities when it comes to games. We used to, play Street Fighter in the office and things like that and talk about games a lot. And after my internship there at Nintendo was finished, we stayed close friends for that whole period. 13 years. That's pretty crazy.
That's pretty crazy, yeah.
When Mikhail approached me in 2013 about wanting to make games, I was immediately just up for it. I said, yep, sure, let's do it.
Yeah.
And it was a very slow process in the beginning, and I'm sure we're going to talk more about that process.
Yeah.
And in the meantime, like before and after the internship, I spent a lot of time in Japan. So I used to live half my year in Germany, and maybe two thirds in Germany and one third in Japan. And after I graduated, I joined a huge German software company where I am working as a professional Unity developer, but not for games, but I do virtual reality, augmented reality app development in that enterprise context, which is really nice because the things that I do in private, which is make games with Unity, I'm pretty much using the same tools, the same skill set.
Right.
But since the context is so different, I don't get burned out on it, which is something that happens to a lot of people that have to do the same thing professionally as they do as a hobby, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I do learn a lot that I can use. Like, it goes both ways, right? I learn a lot on the job, and I learn a lot in private that I can use then at the other gig. So that's super fun.
So tell us about those early conversations when you'd first met. You realized that you had some stuff in common. How quickly did you get on to the whole, wouldn't it be great to make a game, and wouldn't it be great if games looked like this?
Yeah, it's funny because initially we were just friends and we were playing a lot of fighting games together. Street Fighter 4 sort of formed a big basis for our friendship, and it was a good reason for us to keep meeting up even after Johannes left the company.
Yeah.
And keep playing. You know, we just regularly hung out together, and we always shared our thoughts and ideas for video games. We had lots of discussions. And then I think in 2013, I kind of fell out with working for large corporations, and I thought I should strike out and do something of my own, you know, build my own little company. And for some reason, it very quickly popped into my head that, you know what, I have so many ideas that I walk around with. I want to do video games. The only thing is I need to find people to work with because I don't have any programming skills. You know, I have writing skills. I can, you know, do conceptual work, but that's about where it ends.
Yeah.
So I actually met up with an old colleague of mine, a marketing guy that I worked at with Commodore. And he was sort of getting involved for a little while. And I was talking to him about it, and he was getting very enthusiastic. And then the next person I talked to was Johannes. And, you know, I just threw it out there. And out of nowhere, you know, immediately, this is what I loved about how we clicked like that. Is immediately he just said, like, yeah, let's do it. You know, he didn't even have second thoughts. Like, I'm on board. And from there on out, I think we had some, you know, we had a lot of projects which we thought were going to be one, you know, as easy as 1, 2, 3 and just something to get out there. We had a lot of concepts laying around. I had a lot of like niche arcade style game ideas, and Johannes had some other ideas that I thought had more market viability. So that's where we started working on. But those projects sort of feature creeped and turned too ambitious. And I think I've been thinking about this recently a lot. If me and Johannes wouldn't have this strong friendship already, we probably would have left the project a long time ago when things wouldn't work out. But because we talk to each other all the time, because we see each other all the time, and because we're such good friends, there was never a reason for us to just call it quits. You know, when something, a new idea would come along, we would always jump on it. And that was a different thing for the guy that we worked with, who was also a friend of mine, but not as close as Johannes. And he sort of dipped at one point because, you know, he didn't see much coming to fruition. I guess that's what his motivation was. But yeah,
sounds like
thanks to our friendship, this whole thing survived. And then last July, we struck kind of gold with an idea for a game that was actually, you know, we could realize and we would keep working on and wouldn't feel demotivated by.
Yeah, it was fascinating, right? We were tinkering with the game concept for years, I mean, we're doing this in our spare time, so obviously progress is slow anyways. But yeah, we had this thing that we were working on for the longest time, and it kept growing and growing, like those things tend to do. And of course, we know that, you know, for a first project, you should keep it small and all that.
Yeah.
That wisdom. But I guess you kind of have to experience it for yourself to actually believe it, which is totally what we did. And yeah, that project wasn't going anywhere because we didn't make enough progress, or not as much progress as we wanted to. And also, I think the concept was not as strong as the thing that we have now, even though I don't think it was bad. And with enough time spent on it, it could be cool. But that's something that we're going to, if we ever revisit it, it's going to be down the line for sure. And then last year I was working on sort of my own project on the side a little bit. And then I did a little prototype. It had originally had nothing to do with even being a shmup. It was just a very small idea that I had for movement of a ship in a certain way. And I built a prototype for that, very small prototype. And showed it to Michiel, and he was like, "Yeah, that's cool. Let's make a shmup." And I'm not very well versed in shmups. I do like them. I do dabble in them, but I think the shmup that I played the most was probably R-Type on the Game Boy. Back in the day.
Yeah, and good choice.
Yeah, definitely cool game. And I did play some shmups in Japan in game centers. But I was not very familiar with the intricacies of the genre.
Yeah.
And but Michiel very much is. Like, he's a walking encyclopedia of shmup knowledge. which I felt kind of gave us the ability to actually make our own, because I don't want to make a game in a genre that I don't know much about.
Yeah.
But having this guy next to me, I felt that we totally do have the skills to do that. And then we brainstormed a little bit about what we can do, and we came up with this as it appears to be a pretty unique thing that we built. At least people are telling me that. And I hammered out a prototype in like 2 weeks, and for the first time, a thing that we built was fun from the get-go. Like, it was super crude in the beginning, obviously, but it was fun to play from the very first session. And that's, as Michiel said, striking gold is maybe saying a bit much, but we knew we had something that we could actually work with and that people would actually enjoy. And from our testing, it looks like people do enjoy it, and we also do still enjoy it ourselves, and I think that's a very good sign.
Yeah. Yes.
So you said that this is your first shmup. So which other genres did you begin with? What were your first prototypes?
The prototypes for the other things that we made?
Yeah, the other prototypes. The other games,
Right. The first thing was a strategy, like a mix of an RTS and a tower defense thing. PvP.
Yeah.
And that grew into, I don't know, like we incorporated more genres into it somehow.
Yeah.
And at some point we said, okay, this is too much. We need to scale this way back.
You end up with GTA 5.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, we infused it with a lot of arcade sensibilities, actually.
Yes.
Yeah. So, and it was pretty exciting, but yeah, it just... It took a long time for us to get anywhere with it, I think.
Yeah, and then like when was it? Like 3 years ago, maybe we decided to completely scale that whole concept back.
Yeah,
and make a very small version of it so that we could actually have something that we can finish realistically. Yeah. But it lacked that certain spark where it was fun immediately.
I don't want to spend too long talking about the projects, which may be doomed, may not be. You may come back to one
Who
or
knows?
Two of them.
Yeah.
But I'm interested in the whole concept of striking gold and what that feels like. What was it then when you discussed this and you got that, you know, as you put it, Johannes, the crude prototype. What was it about the... I'm doing my best not to say the name of the game because I want you guys to reveal that in a second. What was it about the concept then of this game that you thought we're onto something here?
It has a very interesting cycle, I think. The idea... I had this idea for a long time already, but I thought it was maybe too rudimentary to even put down on paper because I do keep some documents with some design concepts. So I just had it in my head and I wasn't sure what to do with it. I don't know if you ever played UN Squadron or Area 88 on the Super Nintendo.
Yeah.
So there's a moment in that game, it's a shoot 'em up with a health bar.
Yeah.
But one, if you get hit, there's a danger period that kicks in. Yeah. And you need, if you get hit during the danger period, you die immediately. If you don't, your health bar recharges and, you know, you can get hit again, although be it with a diminished health bar.
Yeah.
And I started thinking of this idea, wouldn't it be cool if there would be a shoot 'em up in which you actually had to get hit to sort of get into a brief invulnerability state, to pass through, let's say, impenetrable laser barriers or something like that. Like real puzzle-like. The idea was real puzzle-like. And then, you know, after that invulnerability period wears off, you know, you get enter into that same sort of danger state where you can get killed by the next thing that hits you. So I had this idea and we were talking about let's do a shmup, and so we implemented that into the prototype, that idea. Only we, instead of having a brief invulnerability state, we made it a full-on shield. And you know, as it happens, we started layering on things like being able to extend your shield by shield killing by chain killing enemies and that sort of thing. Like Johannes said, it's just, even though we didn't have any stage designs, we just had some random enemy formations, pretty much cribbed from Gradius. And, you know, even in that very simple state, that whole cycle was just really fun. Going from neutral, then having to let yourself get hit on purpose by a bullet to activate your shield.
Yeah.
So you fly into a bullet to actually get your defense systems to kick in.
Yeah.
And then trying to maintain that for as long as possible. And then you enter this vulnerability state again. So you have this constantly shifting dynamic pretty much that you're in as a player, which isn't cyclical as in the terms of... Now, it is cyclical, but it wasn't like beyond player control. You have control over your the three different states. So, you know, you can try and let your shield last longer. You can decide the moment when you want your shield to kick in. Only the danger time is, of course, the result that you just have to survive through. But there's just something very fascinating and addictive even about that sort of shifting status of your playership.
Yeah.
The core loop was addictive from the beginning.
And that's interesting, Johannes. So even for someone like you, you've just said that you wouldn't call yourself a diehard shoot 'em up fan.
No, not at all.
You felt it was compelling straight away.
Definitely, yeah. To me, I guess it's two things. It's the addictive nature of that loop, and from the very beginning, the potential juiciness of it.
Yeah,
now that we've polished the game a lot, that process of collecting bullets is so juicy. Like you get those nice particle effects and this endorphin releasing sound effect to it.
It's important,
and,
right?
Yeah, exactly. And to me, I think that especially for arcade games like this, the most important thing is that immediate juiciness. And even though we didn't really have that in the prototype, it was immediately obvious that it could be there, and now it is. And it's like we have that effect when we test the game. You know, you change a stage design or put in some new effect or a new sprite or something, and you just want to test that, and we don't stop playing.
When you
have to force yourself to stop testing your game,
that's
a good sign. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. So this early concept and this early hook turned into what's it called, guys?
Shieldmate MX. Well, that's the kind of the anglified pronunciation, which is Yeah, which is totally, totally fine. But if you want to pronounce it in the proper German way, it's probably Johannes.
Yeah, it's Schildmeid.
Yeah.
Mads, is that how you pronounce it?
Oh, yeah, it would be. I see there's lots of German words being used here. Like you have the hunter mode and the warrior mode called Jäger mode and Krieger mode.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. And that is sort of our roundabout way of, again, paying homage to Japanese games that do use a lot of German words in there.
Mm. Yeah.
And since we're from these Germanic parts, you know, it makes a lot of sense to do that.
Yeah. When we were thinking about a potential name for the game, I was thinking about a game that I saw at Tokyo Game Show 2 or 3 years ago. I think it was originally a PS1 game, but it was the first time I saw that new version of it. The game is called Beinpanzer, which means leg tank. Yep. And that's just what the game is. Like you play a tank with legs. Yeah, so I said, you know, let's just go that same route and call it Schildmeid.
Just describe what it is.
So
yeah.
I'll of course ask you to name it Skjolmu instead, because that would be Nordic way of pronouncing
exactly.
That.
And some people are angry that there's no actual maidens in the game.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Mm. One guy was streaming it, one of our beta testers, and he was asking out loud, so where's the Shield Maiden then? I said, and then I just told him, like, the Shield Maiden, you were the Shield Maiden all along.
Mm. Yeah, nice. So you've described then the core mechanic about the absorbing bullets and to fire the shields. Just before we get into some of the weeds around the process and how you guys have gone about building this thing, is there anything else that our listeners need to know? An overview of the game?
Well, this is the Retro Asylum, right? So maybe it's prudent to list off more of our influences for this game from the past. And in addition, of course, to UN Squadron on the Super Nintendo, Gradius is a massive influence. Gradius, the first one on the NES, was the first shoot 'em up that I ever put some serious time in. And since this is our first shoot 'em up, I didn't want to go full on bullet hell Danmaku, mind melting patterns of bullets, because I think there is a, you know, you need to grow a little bit as a developer to do that properly. I mean, there are nowadays sort of algorithms you can use to get stuff like this, but not, you know, if you want to hand design these kinds of patterns, you need to have some more experience under your belt already, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
So we very consciously went after Gradius style bullet and attack patterns. So a lot of aimed bullets and a lot of little ships, little Zako that are on collision course towards your craft that you need to manage.
Yeah, yeah.
So that was a major influence. And Dodonpachi that you guys played for the Retro Asylum was an influence in terms of the three playable ships that we created.
Yeah.
They even have the same color coding. You have a red ship that has a very strong, concentrated sort of firing rate and a fast movement speed, default movement speed. Then you have a green ship that sits in between the red and the blue ship. And then the blue ship, finally, is the ship that has the slowest movement but has a lot of coverage across the screen, a lot of cover fire.
Mm.
Yeah,
I do get some Pro Gear and Arashi moves here as well, looking at the screenshots.
Yeah. Yeah, it's
but that's
almost inevitable, of course. Yeah,
yeah.
And then a game that I realized was a little bit of an influence later on was Saverior, because I always really liked it, how in that game your relationship to bullets changes. So in Saverior, you need to grace bullet patterns to level up your ship, right?
Right.
So you start thinking about bullet patterns as something more than something that just you need to be avoiding. You start seeing these patterns as opportunities, like, oh, I can weave in between these patterns to level up real quickly. And in our game Shieldmaid, you think differently about bullets because you want to collect as many of them as possible. And also, in a sense, there are your resource to power up your ship as well.
And interestingly, I think the visuals come from a completely different direction. Like the obviously the if you've seen the game, the red ship is very Vic Vipery. The others, I don't know, Michiel, did you have any aside from Dodonpachi, did you have any inspirations there for the
not really the I mean I drew some MS Paint doodles just because I wanted to have the green ship, I wanted to be a little bit less pointy than the red ship, and a little bit stumper and everything.
It's an obvious distinction, isn't it, between the two?
Definitely. Yeah.
Exactly. And then the blue ship was something that didn't look like it should be flying around at high speed at all. But then, of course, I just made some MS Paint doodles that were very rudimentary, and I sent it over to Johannes's cousin, who was doing most of the graphics work for us. And he came up with really cool designs that follow the same sort of principles, but yeah, he did something really different with them.
Yeah, it's really interesting. He's also, like me, he's not very well-versed in shmups. So,
but he is a sci-fi nut, so that helps.
Yeah, exactly. So when he got those doodles, that MS Paint doodles that Michiel did, he just went and did his own thing. he's very much a fan of the art direction of Star Wars and Halo,
right?
And I think you can definitely see that in some other ships, like Star Destroyery designs and things like that. And yeah, I think he just went off in his own direction, which ended up looking pretty unique in the field, I think.
Yeah. And I think it's quite cool how how visually distinctive our game became, because a lot of modern shoot 'em ups that come out, they have a lot of like anime sensibilities in there, right? With a lot of cute girls in there and all that stuff. And I personally have absolutely nothing against that. I mean, I buy cave games and a lot of other games like that.
There's certain things you don't buy it for, though, isn't there?
I don't buy it for them, but it doesn't, I don't mind it either. You know, it doesn't put me off either. A lot of time among fellow old-time gamers, I do see a lot of disdain for that sort of thing. So there's a chance that our hard-edged sci-fi look might appeal more to those type of gamers.
On the graphics, how was it when you guys obviously came up with, you had the concept between you and Johannes, you were coding this all on your own, just with your background in Unity? Was that your
So I'm the sole coder, and my cousin, as Bakil said, is pretty much the only artist. Some of the VFX I did, but very minor things. It was a super interesting process, because everything influenced the other things. Like when we started out, we just used some placeholder sprites, some ripped sprites from Gradius and things like that. And my original idea for the graphics was to keep it really simple. But when we got the first part of the OST that Ed made for us of Studio Mudprint's Bullet Heaven HD, we got that music and it was fantastic. And we said to ourselves, well, now the music is too good for what we have visually.
Yeah.
So we need to do something there. We can't have that. That the music is better than the visuals, like
we need to catch
production value wise. And that's actually when we first included my cousin in the process, and he said like, yeah, sure, let's do that. And we're going with the Donkey Kong Country route of pre-rendered sprites.
Yeah.
So my cousin is a 3D artist. And we did just some test renders, and from the very beginning, I think they just look very fitting.
That's good.
We tried to not go with the simplest, just down-resed images, but we try to do some interesting stuff with proper one pixel width outlines. Which I think it looks all right. It looks pretty cool, actually.
Very nice.
And obviously, the game is super retro inspired, but we're doing a lot of technical things that would not have been possible on all the hardware. So all the lighting and the GPU particles and distortion effects and multi-layered shaders and all that stuff.
Not unless maybe you talk to some demo scene people.
Sure, sure. But
there's always someone who can do it more.
yeah, of course. But but still, some things would pretty much have been impossible.
Exactly.
And
I've seen like Mode 7 spread scaling run on a C64, so
of course
everything is possible. No, but I know exactly what you mean. I mean, it would take a completely different approach for starters to get anywhere near those types of effects on older hardware. Yeah,
absolutely.
It does have a very beautiful look, a very distinct look, because as you say, you have this what looks like some sprite renderers for your 3D models. So you have these beautiful sprite work models that are flying around and some incredible lighting effects.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
So it's really beautiful. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I'm sure our artists will be very happy to hear that as well. And yeah, the thing was, the dilemma that we had was, okay, we want to step up the graphics of the game and we wanted to go with a 2D pixel-based look, but we didn't know any world-class pixel artists we could directly work with.
Yeah.
But we did know, of course, Johannes's cousin, who's a world-class 3D artist. So that's where that whole pre-rendered approach came from.
Were you ever worried that you would bring in Johannes's cousin? And although he's a world-class 3D artist, was there ever a moment when you thought, oh, what if we don't like it? What do we say? How can we not like it? You know, he's great.
Well, the thing is, because we started doing this, nobody's getting paid out of the gate pretty much, right?
Yeah.
Like, unless we commissioned, like, people we commissioned for the soundtrack and the promotional art, of course, we paid them. But the core team of us three, we're just doing this out of passion and because we believe in it.
Yeah.
And that means also because nobody gets paid, I feel like this needs to be a very, excuse the corporate type word, but it needs to be a very organic process to where I think everybody needs to get that sort of freedom to fully explore their creativity. So even though I had different ideas for what the enemy fleet was going to look like, I wanted them to be sleek and aristocratic looking, and he went for the very chunky, threatening, ominous, dangerous look. Even though I might have had different ideas in the circumstances that we made the game over, I felt like I should give him that freedom to take that direction as well. And then, you know, it just comes together like that, and in the end it did come together very well.
Sure did. I find that comment about the music sort of driving the production values of the rest of the game really, really interesting.
Hmm.
I mean, for me, in a shmup, one of the most important things is the soundtrack. I think that instantly grabs you and kind of pulls you in.
Such a big part of it, yeah.
Absolutely.
Was that something right from the outset you guys said, right, you know, whatever happens with this, we need to have a really, really high quality soundtrack? Yeah.
As a matter of fact, when we were in our early stages, 2013 or thereabouts, talking about becoming game developers, I remember going on Ed Tremblay on Bullet Heaven HD's YouTube page on his About or community section and saying, if I ever create a shoot 'em up, because I was still riding high, like, oh, we're going to be game developers, you know, we're going to be releasing one project after another. If I'm ever doing a shoot 'em up, I'm going to ask you to do the soundtrack. And he said, like, oh, that sounds really cool. So then, what was it? Seven, eight years later. 7 years later, I went straight back to F because I knew that if there's someone I wanted to work on a shoot 'em up with, as far as the music went, it would have had to be him.
Yeah, it was amazing. Like that first track. I think it was the stage one track.
And we used that in the trailer as well. Yeah.
Yeah, that he composed first and. He made that in like, what was that, like half a day?
Yeah.
And wow. Yeah.
That's amazing.
And then for the next couple of days, he gave us one track per day, basically.
It makes me sick just how talented some people are.
Yep.
I mean, the man just, he dreams of music, he told me once. He just wakes up with a melody in his head, and then he goes behind his computer and his software and just starts putting it together.
And then he even remixed some of the tracks after some feedback from people. And we didn't even like commission those. He was just like, oh, okay, I'm going to make some new remixes.
Here you go.
Yeah, and then he gave us some sound effects that were hard to make. Like most of the sound effects in the game I made. And I'm very far from being a sound engineer or anything like that. So when I had trouble with some sound effects, we also went to Ed. For when you see the game, there's this this hyperspace jump transition.
Yeah.
And yeah, Ed just made this fantastic sound effect for that. Actually, specific for each ship. Bringing those characteristics in there as well, and you just did a bang job on that as well.
Yeah, the three ships are named after mythological creatures, and he sort of modeled, refashioned the hyper jump drive sounds after those, what he imagined those creatures to sound like.
Oh, really? That's cool.
Yeah. So the Hydra has like a multi-layered shrieking sound with the multiple heads when it makes a jump, and the Griffin has a screechy sound at the end. The blue ship, and then the Wyvern sounds just like it's snarling.
Yeah, very cool. So did you give him a brief? Did you say, look, this is what we're doing with the game, or did you show him an early demo, or did you just say, just make us a banging shmup soundtrack?
Yeah, I showed him pretty much that Gradius Sprite Rip prototype, some video footage that Johannes took off of it, and loaded it up to YouTube unlisted. So I shared that with him. Then he came out with that first track, and then actually we started out with a very small scope for the game. We just said like, oh, we just need one stage theme that just keeps repeating, you know. But because we have three distinct themes, visual themes for the stages, some people also, some early alpha testers also felt like, it's too repetitive.
Yeah.
We commissioned him for two more tracks, two more stage themes. And those two, he actually, of course, had sat down to play those stages. So he tailored them much more to the specific situations you're in. Stage two, visually, is sort of a laser grid defense system. And stage three is the classic shoot 'em up armada stage, you know, where you fly in between big ships.
Yeah.
So he tailored it towards that specific situation as well.
Yeah. Interesting how these things... how these things come together.
Yeah, that is the thing I think that fascinated me most, that I had never really considered like that before. We thought we wanted to become game developers. It's just how multidisciplinary and creative a game development project is, like music, 2D art, 3D art,
sound,
writing, the programming. It all comes together and it needs to form one cohesive whole. It's pretty nuts when you think about it.
Yeah, I mean, it's great that, I mean, digressing a little bit, it's great that we live in a world, isn't it, where, you know, you guys who, hobbyists, you know, with some knowledge, obviously, and some background in the field, but how you guys can just get together and just make a passion project like this, but not one that looks like it's been written in BASIC on the ZX Spectrum. A game that looks like such a high-quality product. I can't wait to play it, but it looks like such a high-quality product. Yeah, I think what a time to be alive when that can happen.
The easy availability and the sheer amount of tools that you can get for almost everything for free is really amazing. And I can't even imagine what it must have been back in the day for hobby developers.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Yeah. A lot of the home computer stuff was done by bedroom coders, of course.
Yeah, totally. Sure. Yeah.
Games like Paradroid on the C64 and what have you.
Yeah, but in a year when, I don't know, Horizon Zero West comes out, you know, so does Shubmate.
Yeah.
You know, and it's great.
E3 announcement, baby.
There you go.
Completely by accident, but yeah.
I'm interested in the difficulty, because that's always something that, you know, us mere mortals, the ones that, the ones that we'll probably never ever loop it on the high difficulties. I mean,
I guarantee you, Chris, you will do a 4-all of the normal difficulty.
Oh, mate, you've never seen me play Dodonpachi or a game like that. I'm useless.
I think we're very accommodating with our difficulty on the default mode.
Well, that's what I was interested in. So, was that a conscious design choice that because obviously the shmup community is at its most hardcore level is incredibly skillful and dedicated to these games. Mm. How do you pitch it when you're thinking, right, we want to appeal to as many people as possible? You know, how do you even start with that stuff?
Yeah, it is kind of a challenge, right? Because you can't really make a game to please everybody. No. But I do like to think that we've made a game that is as challenging as you want it to be. Yeah. If you're just a beginner, if you're a shoot 'em up novice, or you feel insecure about your skills in the genre, you can get pretty far in the default mode. Yeah. Because there is the shield mechanic. So once you get a little bit handy with keeping your shield up, you can pretty much ignore the threat of bullets for a large portion of the game.
Right.
So there is that. We start you off in the default difficulty with 5 lives. So you have a lot to play with.
Yeah.
Once you get good at scoring, you can start amassing some extents as well, some extra lives. And the default mode also has a checkpoint system. So after every stage, an automatic checkpoint is made, and you can reload that checkpoint if you like to. Complete with your score even. So you can actually scum your way to the top of the default mode's leaderboard. But
that's
because
what
everybody
Max will do. He always cheats.
But because everybody has that possibility to do that, it becomes sort of a meta game onto its own already. But then there is also the competitive mode that doesn't have any of these features. And you know, the main, let's say the middle difficulty, which is kind of where the meat of the game lies, and that's definitely a much bigger challenge. And once you get better at the game, there is actually more content for you to discover. So, for example, if in any of the two main modes, if you are good enough to where you don't die in the first 3 loops, you unlock a secret loop, for example.
Wow.
I don't want to spoil too much, but there we have a lot of stuff in there. And once you meet certain scoring conditions, you trigger certain secret bosses to appear and that sort of thing. So you can, and if you're not good enough, you're not going to have to face those bosses because you won't meet those scoring conditions. So it kind of works quite beautifully in that way, I think.
So could you just explain the shield mechanic for me once more, because it really intrigues me. Is the shield activated by any bullets, anything you that can hit you on the screen, or are there
certain
bullets?
Yeah, but it has to be bullets.
Okay,
missiles kill you, lasers kill you,
enemy
collisions kill you.
So I won't be able to actually go through a level if I'm really, really good. I can't go through a level without ever getting hit. I need to sometimes absorb some bullets to attack the shield.
You can go through without getting hit through the very first stages, maybe.
Okay.
Later on, it's probably going to be difficult, but of course it's not what you want to do. So...
No.
We try to construct as much synergy there as possible. Absorbing bullets, A, activates your shield, so it helps with your survivability. B, when your shield is active, absorbing bullets actually powers you up, so you get more weapons, better projectiles, homing missiles, options, all that good stuff. And also, it's your main way of scoring. So,
yeah, you only have an active multiplier once your shield is up.
For example, So definitely the meat of the game is a little bit more in scoring than in survival play. You can play for survival, but I think the difficulty is not that high that it's going to keep you engaged for, say, your 20th, 30th playthrough. At some point, you're going to just beat the game. We try to, like, for example, with the bosses, we probably by accident built this interesting system where the bosses are not actually that hard to beat, but they are hard to beat with an active shield when you kill them.
Right.
And that's what gets you the real high scores, because your multiplier is only active when you have your shield active. So a boss has a certain number of cannons that shoot regular projectiles. And once you activate your shield off of a projectile, you do a shield counter. It's an attack on that cannon that shot at you, and that cannon gets destroyed. So when you have a boss that has three cannons, that means you can activate your shield only three times during that fight.
I see.
Which makes the fight easier, of course, but you want to make sure that towards the end of the fight, there's still at least one cannon left, so you can get that shield kill and get the multiplier score.
Yeah, and that can make a difference of millions.
Yeah. Makes a huge difference. And I think that that goes through most of the game, where the difficulty is more in the scoring and less in survivability, even though it can still be very challenging on the later stages.
Yeah, definitely. And but I think we shouldn't forget also that I notice some people that are playing the game, some testers, they think it's a very difficult game for survivability. And some of those are pretty seasoned veterans, yeah. But maybe they have more experience with something like Mushi Imesama or Dodonpachi Daifukatsu or something like that. So it requires a very different playing style, I think, our game. So it takes a mental switch. And the thing that, as we speak about pure survivability, if you're good at planning and resource management, you're going to have an easier time surviving through our game, I think.
Yeah.
But if you're if you're a twitchy player and you're kind of winging it, you're going to die very fast.
I think what was also super fascinating during development, if you ask me now how difficult the game is, I can't tell you because I've been playing it for so much. Yeah. I have no idea what it's like for a new player, whether he's an experienced shmup player or not. Which is why we try to put a lot of emphasis on testing and with a lot of people and regular bringing in new people. We did an extensive alpha testing period where we're constantly still adding new features and overhauling core parts of the game. We did that for maybe half a year with about 20 people. Not all of them have been playing regularly, but some of the guys have really, really been putting in time.
Yeah.
Like they were playing it daily and immediately giving us feedback on new stuff that we put in. And once we settled on all the features and put in almost all of the content that we want to have in there, we started the beta phase and brought in more people, and amongst them some really seasoned veteran shmup players that are world record holders and all that. Wow. But also again some non-shmup players to get their perspective as well.
So can you guys complete it? Can you lube it in a Chimera mode?
The Chimera mode is endless. So you'd have to Todd Rogers it. You'd have to memorize.
I've beaten it twice.
The Chimera mode is the only mode in the game that's endless, but you only get a single life. There's no extents, so the games actually last the shortest in Chimera mode.
Okay.
The only thing you actually get a different ship that, on paper at least, has none of the weaknesses of any of the ships and all of the other three strengths combined.
So you have three modes. You have the Jäger mode, which Jäger is the mode. Easiest one.
Yeah.
Or is that the default?
I think it's more, I see it personally as a mode to get your feet wet with the game, to sort of learn
Chris's
the game
mode.
With.
We'll call that Chris's mode.
And there's the Krieger mode, which is, that would be the regular mode then.
I think that's the main mode, yeah.
Okay. And then you say the Chimera mode is endless.
Yeah.
Is it the same levels or how do you do an endless game?
The game is built from loops. I think in total I've designed like 30 stages, so that means I've got 10 loops fully designed. So that means a loop consists of three stages, but there are, even though you know assets are repeated, they're all like differently arranged from loop to loop, and you meet new enemies get sprinkled in across the loops and get introduced, and new situations and new trickier arrangements of enemies that conspire together to get you get introduced. So yeah, and there are 30.
Actually, I think some of the most interesting designs that you've built are in those very late loops
yeah.
that you can only get to in camera mode.
Yeah.
Okay. Interesting.
The thing about camera mode is we also have a dynamic difficulty or a rank, as the shmup lingo goes, in there. That so the longer you go without dying, the harder the game becomes, and the more it wants you dead. Which is also, it can work the other way around, because if you lose lives regularly, the game stays at a fairly even difficulty level as well. But in camera mode, because if you die, the game is over. The longer you play, of course, the angrier and angrier the game gets as well. So I've designed up to 10 loops. I don't foresee anybody to break into the 11th loop. So the 11th loop is just a repeat of the 10th loop then, with a harder difficulty. But you know, it seems impossible, but that means of course somebody is going to do it. So yeah. I'm planning to at least design 5 more loops after that by hand, just in case somebody gets that far.
The challenge is on.
Yeah, exactly.
There we go. Did it get easier or harder once you're into the swing of things and you're designing the loops and you're tweaking the enemy patterns just to make it gradually more difficult? Was it easier or harder the more you went? Did you start thinking, oh my God, what am I going to do on this next one? Or were you just in the flow?
Kind of in the flow. I think especially the early game, it's a lot of iteration. But then when I felt like a particular bit of a stage had run its course, I completely deleted that and built something new there again. Yeah, sometimes you're inspired. Sometimes you don't quite know what to do. And you pick it up the next day again. And maybe you get you take a lot of showers. Showers usually the moment where you get the brightest ideas.
Yes. Yeah.
Showers and dreams, of course.
Of course. Yes. Not at the same time.
Hopefully not, no.
The testing thing's a key point. I was going to ask about it, but you've already talked about it. But we're playing at the moment in our game club, a C64 game called Mayhem in Monsterland, which is a very different game. But one of the things that the devs, the Rowlands brothers, said about that is, oh, we tested this for months. The problem was they were the only ones who tested it. So they kept making the game harder because they just kept getting better at it.
Yep.
Which feels like was a common thing for back in, you know, the nascent days of video game development. And thankfully, you guys have gone out to not only world record holders, but also mere mortals. And that says to me that the game is going to be hopefully well balanced.
It's super tricky, obviously, to get right, and it's extremely fascinating now to see new players who haven't played the game before, and get their feedback on how difficult things are. And the biggest challenge actually that we have is probably not the difficulty of the game per se, but it's teaching players how the core mechanic works.
Because
it's so different. Like the more you know about shmups, the harder a time you're going to have to in the very beginning get to grasp with it, because it goes
to adjust your mind.
Yeah, exactly. It goes exactly contrary to what you're used to.
I think it's interesting that Matt said, like, yeah, can I play the game without getting hit, without having to activate your shield? And that's I think a lot of seasoned shmup players sort of have that thought, because you see a lot of them actually just trying to dodge all those bullets. But then the game actually becomes more boring, because you're stuck with your pea shooter. You're not powering up your craft if you don't fly into bullets. So it's that sort of thing that is a little bit challenging to communicate. It is a very... The dichotomy there is, it's a super elegant, intuitive system, but only once you get to grips with it, and once you flip that mental switch in your head.
Yeah, yeah.
So seeing as this looks like an arcade game, you need to teach us how to play it by having an attract mode that does it.
Yeah, yeah, we have a little tutorial thingy. Yeah. At first we thought the game would explain itself. Oh, sooner or later you're going to get hit by a bullet and your shield will activate. But yeah, it's what we underestimated, that it's a shoot 'em up and there's a lot that's going on at the same time. And people don't clock, you know, what exactly was it that activated my shield? And they don't clock, like, oh, if I fly into these bullets, the little yellow meter fills at the top of the screen to power up my weapon. And, you know, you're in danger of losing people when they're not registering the mechanics and the game is less fun because of it.
Yeah. Just looking down the list of features here on your itch page, this game we'll come on to shortly where the game will be available and when. Hopefully you can give us some kind of exclusive on release. We'd love that. But we'll come on to that in a sec. Just looking down these list of features, I like the final one, which is optional proper CRT display emulation for a beautiful nostalgic look. Now, this is not a retro game. This is not a remake of a retro game. No. Why did you feel it was important to include a CRT filter?
I thought, imagine how incredible this game would look on a CRT monitor. Yep. because of the chunky pixels and because of all the light effects and the glow in there. And I'm a big fan of the CRT filter emulation in Fighting Rage, for example, which is a beat 'em up that came out a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
Which looks very authentic. And then we had one of our testers, a guy from Japan called, he uses his internet pseudonym Brian Reboot. And he was talking about using external solutions to put scanline filters over his games because he's a CRT scanline filter nut. And then, Johannes just took the challenge on to research actual CRT technology trying to emulate that.
Yeah, I think when you first said that we should do that, I was immediately turning it down because I was remembering bad scanline overlays from like emulators. And
you get those a lot with retro game compilations,
Yeah, exactly. But then I looked into it a little bit and I found some great articles on Gamma Sutra and sites like that talking about how you can emulate the actual technology. And yeah, I just went ahead and implemented something there that it does. It's not an overlay. It actually takes the basically divides the screen up into a grid and then separates the colors into sets of 3 pixels with the RGB values and darkens some pixels for the vertical lines, and it really, and then added the curvature as well.
Wow.
And I think it looks really authentic. The main issue I have with it is that it does not come across well in video. Unless you're streaming the game, unless all the involved resolutions match up, you're going to get super heavy artifacting and the what's the effect called, Moiré effect. That it looks just super washed out. So you need to either play it yourself or have all the resolutions synced up for it to come across well. But if it works, it looks pretty good, I think.
Yeah. Some of our testers swear by it, especially that one guy that started talking about it in the first place.
It's so subjective though, isn't it, this stuff? I mean, some people love having the option and love using it. The scanline filters, others really don't. So it's nice that you've built in the option.
Yeah, I prefer to play it with the CRT filter myself, but or the CRT emulation, sorry.
Yeah, we shouldn't call it a filter, should we? Yeah.
No. When I'm making videos or when I'm streaming, I have to turn it off. Otherwise, the game will just look too messy.
Yeah, and that's an important thing to me personally, to just make those things optional. Like, you should never force people to use one visual setting over another, in my opinion. Sure. And we try to, we already have a lot of accessibility features in there. Like you can turn off pretty much all visual noise, like all the small explosions and the missile trails and things like that, for people that do have difficulty making out those things. And we're planning on going further there. It's a bit lower priority at the moment because we first want to finish the game, but we do plan on adding a lot more there. I do test the game in black and white sometimes to see if that works for people that have trouble with color perception, and things like usually you have to hold down the fire button to continue firing, but I also put in an option to make that a switch, basically, so you only press once and the game auto fires for you.
Yeah.
yeah, we have a lot of things still planned there. Some of them we might add after release.
Yeah. So you've almost made a game. You've made a game, subject to finishing touches.
Yes.
Yeah. It looks ready. What each of you, what's been your favorite part of the whole process and what's been your least favorite part?
That's giggle, a good question.
That giggle speaks.
Yeah, I mean, it's been such a roller coaster ride, really, from the beginning. It's been such a thrill, and just to see everything really come together as quickly as it did, and then working on it, and you know, I personally, of course, really love designing those stages and testing them. Johannes has built within Unity almost like a Super Mario Maker style level design editor for me.
DLC.
So. Yeah. Shield Med Maker.
Exactly.
Shield Maker. And
there you go.
Yeah.
You heard it here first, folks.
Yeah. It's not even a bad idea, actually. But that's been such fun to toy around with. And yeah, I think maybe if you say the least fun is like sorting out the legal stuff, you know, the EULAs and the privacy bits and all that mess. And
yeah.
I would almost say, let's say the thinking about how to market it and how to professionally continue with this, how to set up a company would it have been something I wouldn't have been looking forward to, but it's actually also kind of fun because it's almost like a little game unto itself to try and figure all that stuff out and put the pieces of the puzzle together. So yeah, it's mostly just really great experiences so far.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I guess the favorite part is, I'm thinking two things. One is playing a game that you made yourself, and feeling that it's a good game. That's an amazing feeling. And the other thing is seeing people's reactions to it.
Yeah.
And we've mostly had positive reactions. There have been negative reactions as well, of course, but no game can be for everybody. So that's all right. And the least fun part is wrestling with Unity's sometimes stupidity. When things should work but don't.
Mm.
That can be really frustrating when you're spending so much time on a very small thing, and if it works, nobody will ever even know that it's there. Like what I came to realize, and I'm sure it's the same for Michiel, like the difference between making a cool prototype and making an actual game is massive.
Yeah, I can imagine.
The two things I think that you have to do is you have to actually make a good game.
Mm.
Like the whole package has to be good. And then you also have to make a product. Like all those things that you don't have to think about in the prototype, the menus, safe systems, making sure that it runs on different systems. All of those things take up more time, like every individual part of that takes as much time as the original prototype, at least. Like making the UI work and work intuitively and work in all situations, I spend as much time on that as I did on the gameplay.
I won't keep you guys much longer, but I just want to hear, just describe that moment when you first had something. Didn't have to be the final version, but something which resembled, you know, a reasonable kind of image of what the game would look like. I mean, what was that moment like when you first had it running, you know, with the graphics from Johannes's cousin? I'm sure he's got a name. Johannes's cousin, you know, with the sound by Ed. What did that feel like to think this is our game?
Yeah. I don't know. It was just such a process. There's not really one moment. It just keeps just layering on and on. I think that one moment maybe came when we set up our Discord and we invited people to try it for the first time, and we got the reactions to it. I think a couple of our friends, some people from the Kane and Rince forum, were on there, and just get people's astonished reactions at what we've made, because we have, of course, we have nothing prior to really show for, right?
Yeah.
So people were astonished with what we had built up until that point already, and that was for me a realization. Hey, we're doing something good here, and yeah, just. Some people immediately remarked already, like, "Oh, this is there's so much depth to it already, even in its early stages."
It was definitely very much an iterative process. So I think in the beginning, I didn't feel many of those moments, but there are more now. Like the moment when we released the trailer, the moment when Shmup Junkie featured us in his video.
Yeah.
Look at us now. We're giving an interview as a game development studio.
Look at this.
Yeah, that's a first as well.
You've all grown up.
all of those things are super fun. Also a bit scary.
Yeah. So I hate to do this because the game isn't even out yet. But what could the future look like for Hit Piece Studio? Could we see maybe a return to some of those old concepts, something new? I mean, is this a thing now, or is this just a hobby itch scratch?
This is a thing now.
Great.
I'm glad you said it.
Oh, that could have been awkward.
it was the plan all along, and it took us some time to get to this point where it all takes shape. We definitely have some plans. The first one is obviously to finish this game and to get it on some more platforms. So we're doing Itch first. That was a very conscious choice as well, because it's obviously a much smaller platform, which gives us some leeway to, you know, eventually make some mistakes and fix them before we go to the Steams and the Switches of the world. Yeah. Which is definitely what we want to do next.
Yeah.
With this game, what I had in mind and what I pitched to Michiel in the beginning last year when we started making this, was to first make a small version of a game and then make a bigger one. So think of Bloodstained, Curse of the Moon, and I was going to say Symphony of the Night, but that's not it. What is it called?
Ritual of the Night.
Ritual of the Night, exactly. So
it's easy to blank out
on Freudian slip.
Yeah, exactly. The game has grown much beyond what we originally envisioned, but the feature creep has been kept in check a little bit.
Yeah.
But that's still something that's definitely in the cards. We might do a full high-res 3D version of this game with like a story mode and things like that.
Think a graphical style a la Border Down or Ikaruga or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Something like this. Yeah. So that's definitely something that's in the cards. We might go back to older concepts. I think we've grown a lot from a technical point of view, but also game design, storytelling, all those things. So revisiting those old projects could be super interesting. We also have a lot of other concepts in lots of drawers that we can pull from. I think Steam and Switch for this game is going to be the next big step.
Yeah, I can see it running on a Switch already in my mind's eye, definitely.
Yeah.
Good. Mads, I want to hand over to the guys to give them the opportunity to tell us where and when on Shield, mate. Anything that you want to ask before I do that?
No, I think I'm all good, mate. I'm really looking forward to this. So while you guys were chatting, I've been adding it to my collection on itch.io.
Yeah,
so
from that as well.
Wow, nice.
A notification.
Yeah. Thanks.
Thanks so much. Cool.
Yeah. So guys, where can people find it, and when will it be released?
What is the URL of the itch page? It's something too complicated,
can read that.
Right?
I've got it in front of me, Michiel. Shall I do that?
Yeah, that would be perfect.
So it's
thanks so much.
HITP-studio.itch shieldmaid.io/shieldmaidmx.
There you go.
And that's shieldmaid-mx. But what I can tell you is if you just Google Shieldmaid, it comes up.
Perfect. Yeah, so we're planning to release it this year. It's as specific as we're going to be.
Oh, come on.
Gold version, that is. Yeah, the thing is...
You're as bad as Nintendo.
Yeah, worse even. No, but the simple... reason behind that is we're in beta phase right now, and it really depends on the amount of feedback that we're getting that we want to act on, and it depends on a few crucial features that aren't listed in the bullet point list on our page yet that we think are very important to implement to our game, how fast we can implement that and realize that. But we're very confident that we'll definitely manage that within the second half of 2021.
Yeah, great. Well, look, it's ready.
Hopefully
when
sooner.
It's ready when it's ready, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Like Duke Nukem Forever.
Yeah.
I had just been listening today to that Kenny Rince podcast.
It'll be done when it's done. Well, look, gents, thank you so much for coming on and talking to us about it.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, it's been so kind of you to invite us over here, yeah?
Well, you're welcome. Brilliant. As I said right at the top, I mean, it's not a retro game, but you've talked about some of your retro influences, and I know... from when we've talked to other modern makers of games with retro stylings, that it is definitely something which I know the guys in our Discord and our listeners are interested in. So I hope they're interested. We wish you, all of us at Retro Asylum, wish you all the very best for the launch. In 2021, don't forget, we're all waiting for it.
Definitely.
And then to see, it's really exciting, right? You know, this is, as you've said, you know, it's now a thing. We'll all follow what the studio does and look forward to having you back on to talk about Shieldmaid 2 or whatever comes next.
Yeah, exactly. DX, GX.
Oh, God. You could go on.
EX.
Well, guys, best of luck and best thank wishes. You. And thank you for joining us.
Thanks so much.
Thanks for having us.
Our past selves are now our future selves, are now our present selves, and Mads, I don't know where I am.
I hate time travel. I mean, it's so the worst. I've never seen a good time travel movie since Back to the Future, I think.
Have you ever seen Red Dwarf's episode where they go back in time? Is it Ouroboros?
Yeah, but that works because it's just supposed to be funny. Red Dwarf, everything works in Red Dwarf, if you ask me.
Anything in Red Dwarf, it just always works. Yep. Yeah, how backwards it is. And Backwards, they did an episode called Backwards as well, didn't they? There we go. Anyway, Unscripted Red Dwarf chat is always good. So there we go. Shieldmaid.
I'm just going to leave you there.
Yeah, there we go. Anyway, the guys have just expressed it far more eloquently than I can as to why I'm quite excited about this game. And as I said in the interview, the fact that in 2021, two guys who had nothing but an idea and some industry knowledge, and obviously with Johannes with his Unity coding experience, but two guys like that can bring a game to market and one that does look absolutely beautiful.
Yeah,
I think it's a testament to the times that we live in that can happen. I haven't really got anything else to say, Mads. Is there anything else you want to say before we... I feel like we ought to keep our powder dry because this probably isn't going to be very long at all before we're talking again Game Club.
Yes. We'll very soon be recording the vote for July episode, I think. So, I'm all good, mate. Really looking forward to this whole Shieldmaid. And that's it. I'm glad you dragged me into this interview because these were some really nice guys and I'm inspired by what they've made.
Yeah. So go and check it out on itch.io, guys, and add it to your collection. Mads and I both have, and we'll be looking forward to that whenever it drops. And if we do get some access to the beta testing, which we hope we will, then we will share our thoughts on that on a future episode.
Oh, maybe they'll even allow us to stream it.
Now, wouldn't that be nice?
Yeah, that'd be cool.
That certainly worked with Battleaxe, didn't it? That seemed to go down quite well.
Yeah, it did.
There we go. Right then, we'll save all of our usual stuff. As always, though, just a couple of quick shout-outs. One, and a massive shout-out to our amazing Patreons. We'll be doing the honours when we next record in full. But in the meantime, and a shout-out to our Discord members and the other hosts. Any shout-outs from you, Mads?
just the usual shout out to all of the other content creators. You know who you are, and keep up the good work.
Yeah, and a final thank you to Mikhail Kroda and Johannes Nisho for joining us this evening. Until next time, we bid you adieu.
Bye.
From now on, unlike your parents were, you are the secret force of Retro Asylum.
Playing so fast, they're the only ones who can take you back in time. They play old games, they're more retro than J1 Optimus Prime. At home or the arcade for adventures.